National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The Bishop's Synod on Youth is drawing to a close, and many of the Register's sources in Rome have been hopeful about the Synod's outcome. Cardinal Winfred Napier of South Africa spoke to Matthew Bunsen this week about his experience during the past 3 weeks of meetings. We also turn to another Register team member who is bringing us news from on the ground out at a stateside gathering in Connecticut. Managing editor Tom Wehner reports from Bloomfield, Connecticut, where the Courage International Group is holding a conference where they offer practical and pastoral advice on topics of homosexuality and sexual identity. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio. My co-host Matthew Bunsen is in Rome right now, so he's been hosting a nightly show on the Youth Synod from Rome. And this week he had the chance, as I said, to interview Cardinal Napier outside the Synod Hall. The Cardinal expressed his gratitude for the young people who've been a part of the daily Synod discussions, and he remarked how these youth just livened the room there. He also spoke about the role of the African bishops, this big role that they have played in the Synod. Let's listen to what Cardinal Napier had to say.
Well, I'm joined by His Eminence Wilfred Cardinal Napier of South Africa. Your Eminence, thank you for the gift of time.
It's my pleasure to be talking to you, and especially about the Synod, which is just coming towards its end.
Well, initial impressions, how have the 3 weeks been going, and what are you looking forward to in this last week?
The first thing I'd say is that this Synod has been quite unique in many ways, in three ways, actually. The first one is the hands-on participation of Pope Francis in the preparation for the Synod. He's at every council meeting, he's been at all the, and he held all these different meetings with the young people before the Synod, and he's been present at every single session when he's been able to. That's the first thing. The second one has been the presence of those 34 young people in the Synod Hall has made a huge difference. Mm-hmm. So what we've been talking about is, we're reminded all the time, there are people here, these are the people you're talking about. It's nothing as good as to remind you about the reality as when you see the people present. And the third thing has been that inspiration to have a 3 minute silence after every five presentations. It's given us an opportunity to situate it in context, reflect, put it to ourselves, remind ourselves why we're here.
As one of the key leaders of the church in Africa, what were some of the major concerns that you brought with you that you wanted the Synod Fathers to know, but also the whole church?
I think one of the major concerns we have was, in one way, our lack of resources in the terms of people who have adequate training, adequate preparation for ministry. We are battling at the moment to have the kind of staff in our seminaries that we need to have, namely people who are both experts in their field of theology or philosophy or human formation, but also I would say we need people who are good role models and who are good at accompanying young people. That's been the whole theme of the Synod, has been accompaniment. Well, there's one crucial area where accompaniment is really needed, and that's in the formation of our priests. Mm.
And in that formation of priests, you mentioned the lack of resources. What are the things specifically that Africa needs the most in order to accomplish that?
I would think the human formation to a point where we understand the priestly vocation the way that the missionaries who came and established the faith, namely that you were there in that position as a priest to give everything you've got to make Jesus known, make Jesus present in people's lives. And you did that with absolute devotion. There's a tendency now to see the priesthood more as a position, as a professional, a fulfillment of a professional ambition. And sometimes it is not offering the same service that people, especially the older people, will say. The missionaries gave of themselves totally. Our young priests are not intending to do that. Now, we've got some great young priests who go out of their way to do things. But there is that human formation, that professional formation that we need some supplementing to be done.
Among the issues I know confronting the Synod is the problem, the crisis of clergy sexual abuse. Could you describe the situation in that regard in Africa, but in some of your perspectives on how the church is grappling with this crisis?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think when you come to a synod like this, it's so easy to get sucked into what is really a problem or an issue, a major issue, in one part of the church. Now, it's true, one part of the church suffers, the whole church suffers. But by the same token, where the church is growing and the church is doing good things and the church is really doing what it was meant to do, that also reflects on the church. So I would say in one way, Africa's presence here and some other parts of the world as well, their presence here is a way of affirming those who are going through the battle of the sexual abuse, that things are not all bad. There's a lot of good, positive stuff taking place as well. For us, we don't want to lull ourselves into a false sense of security and saying, oh, it's not a problem we've got in Africa. It keeps on rearing its head here and there as well. Just recently, the president of our conference in South Africa actually issued a statement saying to people, if you have been a victim of abuse, please let us know. Because that's the only way we're going to deal with it and deal with it effectively and the way that we would like to be. In other words, we want to control the situation, not have to be reacting to it. So come forward and we'll use our protocols that we've got in place and see what we can help you with.
The church in Africa is the fastest growing anywhere in the world, quickly outstripping resources, I know, and just the ability to evangelize fast enough. What do you see then as the role of Africa today for the universal church?
I think Africa is playing a role in a number of ways. I think by having the best quality people coming to a gathering of the church at universal level, like the synod, is certainly one of those ways where we're not just sending people to represent the church just to be a presence, but actually coming and to be an example of what we're talking about. The second thing I would say is Africa has certainly a new way of seeing things, a new way of saying things. We've come out of a situation where we were in the background all the time. Now we're getting a chance to actually be leaders and to lead in a way that we know is corresponds to the needs that our people have expressed to us. The challenge, of course, is that when you don't have all the resources, you have to depend on others for that. So we're still very dependent in sending our students over here to Rome if they want to go and get postgraduate degrees and so forth. But increasingly, a university like the Catholic University of East Africa is providing that service to many of our African churches. We have just sent recently from South Africa quite a few priests there to do canon law, which is on the same level as the canon law that they'd get here. And being in Africa, I think they're getting to see the problems that they have to deal with when it's talking about African marriage. How do other African countries handle this here, rather than being simply taking the European model? The second way in which I think the African church is making a contribution, I've just heard from a few of the bishops here, how many African priests they've got in their diocese. So it's almost as if the missionary expansion is going backwards now from Africa back into Europe. We haven't got the same kind of structural and infrastructural support and resources, that's true. But the personnel that are going through, I think, are making a good impression.
I think it was Cardinal Lorian Rugumwa many years ago who predicted that it would be Africa's task to re-evangelize the West.
Right,
is that something that you're referring to?
That's what I'm referring to, yes. And how it's happening is that even in South Africa, for instance, religious community members are coming down to South Africa to join their communities that were established by the missionaries. And so there's an internal flow of missionaries as well. And that brings us, it exposes us to different realities, different ways of doing things. I mean, if you have a priest that's come down from the Congo and he's going to celebrate the Mass, it's a very different way than what we grew up with the Irish missionaries, where the Mass was done quick.
Cardinal Arinze has spoken about enculturation of the liturgy, and sometimes that can be difficult for Westerners to Europeans to appreciate.
Just it certainly does, especially when it goes over 2 hours at a time. But there's a way in which when you experience a liturgy in Africa, especially if it's an ordination, a profession or something like that, there's such an element of community involvement, community joy, community faith, that it's something you don't easily forget. And it gives you a G up in yourself as well. You feel you're encouraged and carried forward.
Having been to Mass in a few African places, especially Tanzania, joy was one of the most contagious elements of the liturgy. One of the things that also strikes me most in talking with African bishops is the desire for clarity of teaching.
That is something that we do need because, you know, the especially with the internet giving people such instant information, and very often what goes on the internet, and I'm thinking particularly of the social media, people read headlines and that's what they pass on. They don't read the story, put it in its context, and then come from there to draw their conclusions. Just to give you an example, Pope Francis was on a trip from Africa, I think it was, and he was asked the question, Pope Francis, what have you got to say about the gay lobby in the Vatican? And his answer was, I don't know. I haven't seen anyone yet with an identity card saying gay or not gay. And then he went on to say, but of course, if somebody is genuinely seeking the Lord and trying to live his life accordingly, who am I to judge him? Now that, who am I to judge? Not the him, but who am I to judge? Has become almost a slogan. This is Pope Francis's attitude towards homosexuality. But he actually goes on then and he says, by the way, this is what the Catechism of the Catholic Church teaches. And he reads it out, what was said. So that's the kind of thing where there's a danger with this bite-sized presentations that Pope Francis is really good at, that they're taken out of context and then they become the headline. And I think this is one of the challenges that we are facing with the media at the moment is, and I think it not necessarily what the reporters are writing, but the headlines are put there. And the headline can be quite different from what the story is saying, or the emphasis of the headline may be different from what the story actually says. People see that and then they pass it on as if that's the full story. That's one of the challenges, I think. In Africa, maybe we're not quite that exposed yet because in many places you don't have the social media and the communication, electronic communication working all that well.
Which raises the question of the digital continent, as Pope Benedict put it. How increasingly important is that to your mission in Africa?
Look, this is one something that I can reconcile myself to passing on to the next generation. I'm not going to be able to be an expert on blogging and tweeting. I'm doing quite a bit of, but Facebook I'm not very good at, because I think if I were try to do the two things, I would have very little time to do anything else. But I think it is really a challenge there. And what came out of the synodia from the young people in particular was, look, this is the way you've got to reach us. This is the way you've got to communicate with us. And then to my great interest and amazement, some of them said, we've already got X, Y, and Z. There's e-catechism, there's this, that, and the other. So there's a whole lot of resources already there. And they're not from the developed countries. This was from Indonesia and the Philippines, where they've got quite a development there. And I think this is one of the things that we can take from here. We've got a lot of young people that are studying electronics, taking that as their way forward. And this is something I think that we can develop with them.
Well, talking about that digital divide, one of the themes that's been recurring here is that bridging the gap between the generations, between those who are older and those who are younger.
Yeah. That has been quite a thing, but I would say that at this synod, if anything, the synod fathers were very, very conscious of the fact that we're talking about young people. That's very important. But we're talking with them, not at them, and that's even more important. Secondly, kept on being underlined was the fact that while we're talking about what the church must do, we're including those young people in the church. They are the church. They're the ones that we're going to have to pass on the responsibility of taking this matter forward.
And in dealing with young people, one of the questions that's often asked about any synod, and I think this one in particular, is when you go home, what will be the practical results of your being here for essentially a month away from your people?
The first thing I have to do is to get together with the other two representatives from the Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference, who are here officially representing the conference. I'm here as a member of the council. But to get together with them and say, what are we going to do? What do we present to our conference? And how do we put into practice some of the great ideas that have been put forward here? On another level, we've already got something going in our conference, where we had the second one of a kind of a conference, Mini World Youth Day. We called it Mini World Youth Day because we imitated as much as we could the structure, the functions, the devotions that were done at World Youth Day. And we've had two of those there. And that has been a great way of helping those who will never get to a youth day because of the expense to have some kind of an experience of it. What impressed me about that was some of the presentations that were done were very, very good, excellent. But also, we had a Blessed Sacrament Chapel there, and it was never, ever just one or two people in there. It was always full. And some spent a considerable deal of time there. I see then, as a result of that, the youth department in my diocese decided that let's have a synod in our diocesan level, which is going to be about youth and with youth. And that's what we're preparing for next year, July, August, we have a synod in our diocese. I would be suggesting to our bishops' conference, we refine that Mini World Youth Day and make it something that is much more got to do with teaching and forming and not just a jamboree celebration. Thirdly, I think I would also, and that was said quite strongly, every diocese should consider having something like that. And if you're going to have that, it means that we've got a budget, an item into our budget has to be the ministry to youth. It has to be more realistic than possibly just, oh, we just have a chaplain and that's about all we pay for. You
know? Well, His Eminence Wilford Cardinal Napier, thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome. Thank you. It's
been God bless.
Talking to you. Thanks. God bless you.
The Bishop's Synod on Youth concludes October 28th. Look for Matthew Bunsen's analysis of the Synod at ncregister.com. Now stay tuned for my conversation with Tom Wehner about this week's Courage Conference. This is Register Radio. More when we return.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and Tom Wehner, Managing Editor of the Register, joins me now. He attended the Courage Conference in Bloomfield, Connecticut this week. And we've had Father Phil Bochansky on this show before. He's the Director of Courage. But just to recap for our listeners, Courage is an apostolate that seeks to support men and women who experience same-sex attraction in living out their faith to the full and living their sexual identity according to God's plan. So, Tom, welcome back to Register Radio. It's been a little while.
Yes, it has, but it's always good to be with you.
So you've attended this conference. This is your first time, right, going to the Courage Conference?
Yes, this was, and I was greatly anticipating it.
And what was the theme of this year's conference? Because it's an annual thing.
Yes, it is. This one was proclaiming the splendor of truth with love.
Wonderful.
And not only it did that, and then some.
Yeah, I bet. We'll get into what that truth is in a few minutes. But who were some of the speakers that you guys heard from?
Well, not only was there an address to kick things off by Father Paul Cech, who is the former executive director of Courage, but the current executive director, Father Philip Bochansky, gave a very stirring address. And I also was able to attend sessions with Dr. John Grabowski at Catholic University of America, scripture scholar Dr. Mary Healy, and Janet Smith, who is Dr. Healy's colleague at at Sacred Heart Seminary in Detroit. So they were very well attended and very well received.
Very good. I those are all people we like to hear from at the Register. We call on them as sources often, so it's always nice when you get to hear them in person. So what were some of your takeaways from the conference as an attendee?
Well, some of the things I took away were that it was great to hear these people who are often heard in our pages. These men and women who were the speakers often are seen in the Register's pages, both online and in print. And it was great to hear from the different speakers from a diversity of angles. We heard about God's plan for marriage from a scripture scholar, mm-hmm. how the life-affirming discussion of Pope John Paul's Veritatis Splendor and what he amplifies the narrative of Genesis on what it means to be a man and a woman and God's plan for us. And I heard testimonials from the actors, not the actors, but the interviewees from the great documentary from Courage, the Desire of the Everlasting Hills. And so there were witness talks, there was scripture, there was church teaching, the catechism, and they all resonated with me greatly on this affirmation of what it means to be a man and a woman today. And one of the big things was they spoke with clarity. Mm-hmm. And in these times of confusion over what it means to be a man or a woman and with love, it was just a great moment to be there with the hundreds of attendees who were there.
Right. Yeah, I've always wanted to attend one of these conferences. It just has not happened for me to be able to attend the conference. I have family member who has a same-sex attraction, and so it's been something I've wanted to learn more about, to understand the way that family member feels and to understand how I can love them in a greater way and encourage them in God's plan. So these conferences are not only for men and women who experience same-sex attraction, but it's for people like me, you know, who know have family members. Who else was there? Who did you speak to? Who attends this conference?
Well, it was interesting because I was able to speak during the breakouts with diocesan representatives of Courage conferences. One, as a matter of fact, was from the Diocese of Birmingham, who I had a nice chat with. One of the smaller discussions I had was with a husband and wife from the Diocese of Metuchen, New Jersey, who belong to NCourage.
Mm-hmm.
And that group has always had a special place for me because we're all a family in the body of Christ, and to hear how mothers and fathers who worry incessantly about their children all the time, they're always worrying about their children no matter what their ages are, and how same-sex attraction affects them and how they continue to stay true to the faith, right, while staying true to their children. It was a 10-minute conversation, but it really stayed with me.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I like hearing those too, because it's encouraging. We face so much opposition. The church's teaching on this matter faces so much opposition, and so it's hugely important to understand how to dialogue with the culture. How does the conference the conference handle the opposition? I mean, this isn't a welcomed message. What was given in that regard?
No, it's not. And it was one of the questions that I asked in some of the smaller discussions with members of Courage, were how do they go about defending what Courage does in an often antagonistic way? And their response was very, very Christian. It was wanting to, because they wanted to know who that person was talking to. So they don't use labels. They mm-hmm. look at them as a son or daughter of God, and they go beyond the label of how they're describing themselves and actually engaging them and wanting them to tell their story in order to know them better and to be able to commune with them on a more personal level, and rather than a label. And so it's being human is all about relationships. And so I think the approach that Courage takes even in the face of great opposition today, is admirable.
So Father Philip Bochansky gave us his talk to post at ncregister.com, so our listeners can go and look at his talk there. Tom, would you be able to, in a short nutshell, tell us what Father Bochansky had to say in his keynote?
Sure. He basically, regarding the last question that it connects with the last question, because he talked about a lot of the confusion that exists today, and in an often antagonistic world, how a certain narrative is being pushed forward by society, and how simple things as what it means to be a man and a woman are being taken out of context, right, or even willfully being misrepresented today, and he gave his great talk about building a true bridge. The title of his talk was "No One Lives on a Bridge: Reflections on the Current Catholic Discourse," and in that very short 1 hour talk, he brought more clarity to the situation that I've seen in scads and scads of the babble that goes on around us.
That's true. Well, we can invite our listeners to read more of that talk at ncregister.com, along with many other sources of enlightenment on the topic of same-sex attraction and other topics. For more news and analysis, check out the ncregister.com. And thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Michael Birchfield, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.